Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I am Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christopherson, Michael Brunts here on Tuesday. It is a no cavities Tuesday.
Man.
Fresh off the dentist, have that like tingling sensation going on where they poke and they prod. But as I said, I walked out a proud man. So I don't remember my last cavity. I think we're getting close to a decade at this point.
Did you get a little talking to, though, that you were close or that you got to work on some things?
No, I was told that it looked really good. But the way that I'm told that is like one of those where it's kind of like a, you know, they expected it would have been worse based on just like, I don't know, my physical appearance maybe or whatever. And so the way that good was said there is more in surprise.
Good.
In terms of compliment.
Yeah.
So, but I just keep showing up. I don't do anything special. I keep them brushed. I do a terrible job of flossing like the rest of America. And I go in twice a year and I keep coming out looking good.
Yeah. I always get a serious floss lecture given to me every time. And I do floss a little bit, but not to their liking. And I'm always waiting for the little slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet the person that flosses an appropriate amount to not get that lecture. I don't think that person exists who isn't on the other side of that chair.
This is one of those things that like, you know how people talk about how there's like an alternate dimension where there's news stories that happen, but they don't really happen, but their brain thinks that they did. I swear it came out sometime in the last like 5 years where the American Dental Association basically admitted that there's like inconclusive evidence on flossing.
You should bring that up next time you're in there, even without the facts, just sort of launch into it.
Well, the ADA says.
Yeah. Take them to task a little bit. See if they have some answers.
I found definitive proof that I didn't just create that in my mind.
Well, nowadays it's a low bar to bring up something like that. So I think you'd be okay to do that.
Yeah.
Just say you read it in a journal. You can, as long as you say you read something in a journal, you don't have to specify what the journal is, where it's from, when it was from. Then you've got some credence.
I found an article on Harvard.edu in the Harvard Health Publishing Harvard Medical School blog that references a study about flossing where it says that it's inconclusive in terms of what it does for you. So I am vindicated.
So this is all just one big myth that's been perpetuated upon us by Big Floss?
Yep. Big Floss has been trying to really, you know, make America feel bad when perhaps they shouldn't.
I think we've uncovered something here today that I think is very important.
The question is how many of the guys on the offensive line are flossing like they should?
Look at that segue.
All right. Well, you, I would guess.
I don't know. I haven't looked at their teeth closely enough to really get one.
I would guess Ethan Piper is a pretty good flosser. That guy, he's kind of a guy of many trades from high school. He feels like a guy who flosses a couple times a day.
Well, we'll have to ask him that. I'm guessing you don't want to specifically pick a player that you think is a bad flosser.
Not really. No, I mean, they would be in company with me, so it wouldn't be like I'm totally dinging them, but I don't know. Do you have one in mind?
I don't. I was curious.
Okay. No, I'm not going to go there. That's a road too far to criticize anybody's flossing without the facts and without some hard proof.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's just move off the flossing and talk offensive line. Then we can criticize to our heart's content, right? Or praise.
Yes.
All right. Let's do that. So we've been running through some positions here. So far we've hit on running backs and defensive backs. My notes tell me, and now we have moved into the offensive line. And this is a unit that we were pretty excited about coming into 2020. There were some good moments, some not so good moments, and the majority of this group appears to be returning again in 2021. And I think that's a good thing. And I think for two of them, Ethan Piper, Bryce Benhart, you know, last year was sort of the showcase of, you know, Benhart got beat a couple times. Ethan Piper struggled a couple times. Each had some of the penalties they had to deal with. But for the most part, they seem to have held up as offensive linemen that can play in the Big Ten. Bryce Benhart got 8 starts. Ethan Piper, I think, got 7, but he played in all 8 games. And that experience is going to be really valuable as you also add in Turner Corcoran, who played against Rutgers. You add in Cam Jurgens, who started all the games and then played better after his benching. And then we'll figure out what happens at right guard. I think this offensive line, I think you know what 4/5 of it is going to be. And I think there's a reason, again, to be excited about what they can do for Nebraska, in particular Nebraska's rush attack.
Yeah, let's start with Benhart. I thought he had a good year for a redshirt freshman because I didn't think we heard a, you know, we didn't hear his name a ton, which is a good sign. He had a rough game. I believe it was Minnesota against his home state school where he had a tough day. And there's a few plays he would definitely like back. And there's a few penalties that he had that were costly. Some of them were questionable in nature, perhaps, but they were still called. But all in all, for how hard this league is for a 19-year-old lineman in the trenches, I thought he was pretty sturdy. And honestly, Matt Farniok was sort of in a similar position as a young player where he was starting games as a redshirt freshman. And I feel like Benhart is probably further down the road than Farniok was when he was a young player, if I'm comparing recent guys who had to play early. So I think that's a good sign. And, it feels like now you've got the potential to set up your tackle spots for 3 more years, you know, with Corcoran coming in at left tackle and Benhart over there on the right, or however you want to organize that going forward. There's at least some stability, hopefully, that is about to be set.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with all of that. And I think that stability is going to be pretty valuable for this group overall. And I think it's reflective of kind of the recruiting we've seen from this staff and the emphasis they put on revamping this offensive line since arriving in December 2017.
Did you guys feel like this year that the offensive line was a group that you could lean on to win you games? Are they at that point yet?
I don't think so. They weren't in 2020. But it's tough, right? Because I think if you're going to do that, then the style of play also has to reflect that too. And I didn't think that they were ever a hindrance to Nebraska, but it didn't feel like they also at times were the complete strength that maybe you're hoping they will be with more experience overall.
Yeah, they're a little more inconsistent than I hoped going into the year. But Schaefer is hitting on a good point about if Nebraska actually leaned on them in the correct way or not. You know, if the style of play Nebraska had in their offensive system best fit those guys. And, you know, when you ask them to line up and just knock somebody back and run the football, there were times when they did it really well. They were actually pretty good in short yardage situations, I think, by the numbers. And their rushing numbers were okay. But, you know, I think the reason people are kind of down on things with the rushing game is so much of it was QB reliant. And that's obviously not the O-line's fault, who's getting the call to run the ball behind them. But that's the part where they're kind of mixed in with that uneasy feeling of where's the running back in this offense. And if Nebraska does get more into that, where they're like, hey, we're going to lean heavy on the running back, is this O-line to that spot where they can get out their horns and roll on some people and own a game sort of like they did Rutgers week after week? And we just don't know that because we probably didn't get enough opportunities to even honestly look at that, to observe it.
It's an interesting group going into the spring because you like you said, you can pretty much, I think, lock the tackles in with Corcoran on the left side and Benhart on the right side. Obviously, Cam Jurgens is going to be your center. Nebraska went to Trent Hickson at times at that left guard spot whenever Ethan Piper struggled or had a false start penalty or something like that. And I don't think they really missed a huge beat there, but who do you guys see, I guess, as emerging from that group of guys at the right guard spot? Because I could see a situation where you have Hickson on the right side, or, you know, maybe you bring in the Colorado State transfer Nwelly, or, you know, Brock Bando gets in the mix maybe. I mean, how do you guys kind of handicap that? Because that to me seems like the only question mark going into the spring is maybe how that's going to shake out. Whereas, you know, everything else seems pretty set. I think pretty solid actually, given kind of how things went this year.
Yeah, I think the Hickson call at right guard is a good one. If I were to make a rough draft right now, who's your best guess at starting O-line? From left to right, it'd be Corcoran, Piper, Juergens, Hickson, Benhart. And then guys who are interesting to me are Brant Banks as sort of a backup tackle who they've always said they really like, but we haven't actually seen yet a lot of. And then there's some guards, interior guys that could turn over the apple cart a little bit, like a Nwelly type is interesting to me, who started at Colorado State, got his feet wet for a year. Can he make a move on the inside? And there's still some guys from the 2019 class that I wonder about if this is the year any of them make some noise. And I'm talking about like a Michael Lynn or a Fritchie or somebody like that. I don't dismiss that those guys are done. I mean, I think sometimes there's a few guys, a very select few, who can play right away in the first year or two. And then most O-linemen you're going to get, it's going to take at least year three where they really surface. And so to me, some of those 2019 guys, this is sort of that year where it's a tipping point. Like, are they going to be part of this equation in the two deep or not?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Brian hit on some of those guys that I'm really sort of fascinated, but there's a big one that I'm really going to be curious if he makes a move in the spring. Ezra Miller, the Iowa walk-on, who was a four-star for the Hawkeyes, that was a well-regarded lineman, that it seemed to be the consensus was that he was going to be more of a bigger guard than he would be a tackle, even though I think he's 6'5", 6'6". And so he's someone that I'm kind of wondering about. They took some chances with Miller and Nwelly, having not chances, but they took them on as walk-ons. And I'm curious if those guys can turn around and take some of these spots. And so I sort of look at a Brock Bando and kind of wonder if he isn't just a guy that Nebraska likes for depth purposes, that can play a couple different positions. I think Brant Banks likely going to stay at tackle. Trent Hickson does seem like he would be the first guy up, but I think Nori Nwelly and Ezra Miller are two guys that I would definitely keep an eye on this spring when Greg Austin starts to talk about offensive line play.
Yeah. Then the big question is Juergens. I mean, I feel like I have been a big defender of Juergens because I think I see what their vision is in him. I think he's got high-end talent to be, when it just comes to the blocking and the mechanics of being an O lineman. I like a lot there, but, you know, can the snap issues officially go away, you know, for good in 2021? It can't be a thing anymore. And he did do a better job at the end of the season with it, but we kind of thought he did that in 2019. And then they came back again. And so that's where you worry about it a little bit. He needs to make that huge move this year for this O-line to be a dominating force. He needs to be like that all-conference type guy and get the snap thing under control. And then I think the whole thing can take off from there. But he's sort of the straw that stirs the drink to me.
Well, so much of the timing aspect, I mean, is – just him getting the ball to the quarterback. I mean, you can see how that's broken down plays. Obviously there's been the really kind of disastrous snaps where they've gone over guys' heads and stuff like that. But I mean, that's a basic thing that, you know, when you're in kind of a really key season, I mean, you just can't have those things happening when the offense is already struggling enough as it is. I mean, what do you guys think progress looks like for that group in 2021 beyond the spring? I mean, what does an improved offensive line look like, and what does that mean for Nebraska's offense?
Well, it comes back to the style of play that Nebraska will choose to employ. I mean, what you want is that they can start to roll up yards on people, that they're opening up bigger holes for the running backs. It did feel like at times they struggled early in the year to create the creases. And some of that comes down to our teams just loading the box. And you can sort of do that against an offense that doesn't have a threat downfield. It's, you know, not a surprise. But so much of Nebraska's offensive inconsistency makes it hard to talk about the future at times, because is the offensive line, did they struggle because the box was overloaded? Did they struggle because they couldn't handle their individual blocks? Did the run game struggle because they didn't have the right running back in there? Did the run game struggle because they weren't given enough usage? Does everything struggle because Nebraska can't complete a pass over 20 yards downfield? It's just like it gets sort of difficult to individually assess things when you have an offense that was basically out of sync more than it ever was in sync. And that just becomes a problem. And I think, you know, what I would hope is that they continue, like Brian said, to play well in the short yardage area situations, that the rush offense continues to perform at a high level. I thought the pass protection outside of, you know, that Minnesota game, particularly on those third downs for Bryce Benhart, was pretty good this year. I don't recall the quarterbacks being under a ton of duress constantly, and it not being just sort of a one-off in a series here and there. That's going to happen. Guys are going to get beat. But I felt like the pass protection was pretty solid last year, and so if they take another step there and they continue to do well in short yardage, the rest of it's going to be based on somewhat how the offense performs in general.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers. They allowed 16 sacks last year. So
two a game.
Yeah, let's see. What were they the year before? They allowed 28 in 12 games. So they did bring that number down a little bit, the average at least. So that's good. I mean, they were done some favors at times because of the mobility of their quarterbacks. I'm sure there's a couple cases that Greg Austin and those guys would point to in their own room, or maybe the QB didn't see something he should have either, and that cost him a sack. Ultimately, as an O-line, you're going to be judged in those big moments. I did feel like it was sort of a struggle when Nebraska would get down to about the 2 or 3 yard line, goal line situations. I didn't always have a ton of faith they were just going to pound it in. And then, of course, you know, in a big moment against Iowa, you're moving the ball for a game-winning drive, and you give your, you know, you have a senior just get whooped and give up a game-ending sack. You know, it's those type of plays which that's sort of the ultimate grade on you. You gotta step up in those moments, and so those are the things they got to kind of iron out, is rise to those occasions when there is a final drive or whatever to get the job done.
Brunch, you got thoughts to close us out on the offensive line?
No, I mean, I think I saw, I agree with you guys. I think I saw improvement in spaces last season. I think they were small steps, and I agree. It is kind of hard to – offensive line play is the hardest to kind of grade, just because, you know, there's so many things that factor in to how well those guys perform. I think that, you know, when they had – the chance to assert themselves, they were largely able to do that. I think obviously Minnesota being the one that kind of stands out is where that wasn't the case, but you know, you're starting to see that the guys that you had to win recruiting battles for show up on the field for you and play pretty well. And I think that's always trending in the right direction. I think Turner Corcoran, getting to play a full year is going to be very fascinating. I was really impressed with him as a run blocker. I thought he moved really well. And frankly, I didn't really note, you know, the fact that he was in the game versus Brendan Hines. And I think that speaks a lot to what Corcoran can be. So we'll see. I think a large part of, you know, just them being able to kind of assert themselves against defenses goes back to the kind of big picture type questions that Nebraska has to address this offseason: how they call plays, what's their identity, those types of things that, you know, need to be kind of fleshed out now, because that to me is how you're going to see the biggest change in this offense, is more of those kinds of executive level, big picture questions that have to be answered.
Yeah. Yep. Good stuff. It's a good rundown there. And it's a really interesting position group that, again, looks like it's going to be one of the strengths, if not the biggest strength for Nebraska's offense as they head into 2021 prep. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about Nebraska's basketball situation. We're going to get the wheel out, I'm told. And we'll see where the rest of the show takes us. So you don't want to miss that. We will be back with more Husker 24/7 podcast after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
And we have returned, but Nebraska basketball won't return for quite some time. Michael Bruntz, give us the latest.
Yeah, Nebraska is fighting the COVID battle in a very, very big way right now. Over the weekend, Nebraska announced that a pretty significant number of people in their tier one personnel either have COVID or have been in close contact with people who have and are having to quarantine because of it. So according to them, they got 12 individuals in the program, including 7 players in Hoiberg, who are in isolation because of a positive test. So that's a lot, you know, that they're having to deal with. And in Nebraska, you know, you go back to kind of what Fred had said at the start of the season, that they had been able to kind of weather the summer pretty well in terms of not having to deal with cases and keeping guys healthy. And I think Nebraska just got really hit pretty hard here. You know, obviously Ivan was the first guy that missed time because of it against Indiana. And then things just kind of spread from there. So as we stand right now, Nebraska is not playing tomorrow night against Minnesota at home. The game on the 24th against Iowa has also been postponed. The next earliest game that they could play is January 30th against Penn State. And I think there's, you know, a very real chance that Nebraska is not going to play another basketball game until February, just with the way things are. So, you know, for a team that needs practices, they need games, they need to be on the floor together, this is not ideal, and it's not going to get any better. I mean, you look at Nebraska's schedule the way it is now, there's not a ton of wiggle room to reschedule a lot of these postponed games. I think there's only maybe one stretch towards the end of the regular season where there's more than a couple days separating scheduled games. So how they get those in, I don't know, but just not what you want to have in a season where when you're already kind of struggling in a very good league to get things going.
I'm curious, like, how big of a loss to you is it that Nebraska will miss out on, let's say they're going to miss, what, four games here minimum?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's say they lose three out of those four games in terms of being able to make it up. Is that a big deal to you in a year in which this was a lot of it was going to be kind of building towards next year?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, the biggest issue to me is, you know, you're not even like they're completely shut down right now. Like you, right. you're not getting practice time. You know, I don't think guys are even allowed to, you know, shoot on their own and be around the facility. So, you know, not only are you missing out on the practice time and kind of that development time, which, you know, the staff really kind of prides itself on, but you know, you're not around your teammates. You're, you know, really going to be hard pressed, I think, to kind of get these games in anyways. And, you know, this to me, I think was a year where, okay, you develop kind of a core of guys, you bring a lot of those guys back, you add to it a five-star signee, two guys that really fit your offense, and maybe you're kind of building something towards something next season. So even if you looked at this season as kind of a lost year, so to speak, you're not getting the benefit of that lost year. If you know what I mean?
Right.
Like you're not getting the development time that you're going to need
right.
to be able to
the
make.
The lack of court time is not helpful in any way whatsoever.
Right. And the thing too, I mean, if you are not able to do anything now, I mean, what's kind of the reacclimation period to have to go and play games? I mean, it doesn't take long for guys to completely lose conditioning and have to gain that back. So it's just it's not good. And I know Nebraska is obviously not the only program that's battling stuff like this, but just in part because I think they had such a good summer in terms of avoiding it, I think that's part of the reason that it's kind of running rampant right now.
Yeah, that's just tough for a program that, you know, and it felt like they had turned a little bit of a corner. You get Walker playing, you start to they look like a little bit different of a team. You have Lat hitting threes. They come back against Indiana. They give up that game, and then it's like they're just done. They couldn't even build off of that. And I don't expect them to play the rest of this month. You know, and I'm hopeful that they're able to get their games in February and can get somewhat of a season here, but definitely a difficult second season for Fred Hoiberg and that basketball team.
Well, you haven't even had there has not been one game this season where Nebraska has had what you would consider its rotation available, like its full rotation available, because I mean, even against you know, Indiana, you get Derek Walker back, and then you don't have Ivan in there. So that's just kind of been, you know, the way it is for this program. And this is definitely not going to, you know, make that improvement curve any less steep. But they were starting to play better basketball in stretches, and I think there was confidence within the program that you were starting to see improvement that would hopefully translate to wins or certainly more competitive games than what they've been doing. So it's kind of it's not ideal.
Brunch, you got that wheel handy?
Yeah, let me get it out here. It's been collecting dust a little bit. Give it a here we go. It's spinning. So I think I've got a kind of a forward-looking topic based on something that BC wrote on the site. We'll see if it lands on that. Oh, look, it did. All right. Wow. So yeah.
What are the odds in these situations here?
Surprisingly pretty high.
Okay.
All right. So BC wrote kind of about guys that are intriguing players for the spring once they get going with spring, guys that need good springs. Let's quickly run through one guy who you are going to be very closely watching this spring to potentially give Nebraska a big boost in 2021.
Big boost?
Or an adequate boost.
Adequate boost.
Can we eliminate like Adrian Martinez from this discussion?
Yeah, yes. No, this is more.
I was just looking for the parameters. Like I felt like, you know, that's too easy.
These are sort of guys on the fringe, correct? Yeah,
the wheel ran out of space for me to etch all this, but guys that are kind of on the fringe who we haven't seen much of at all to this point.
I'm starting to wonder if you're even etching. I got to be honest.
Whoa, that's a bold accusation that was just made. I don't know how I feel about that.
Just because you didn't have any cavities today, you need to step down a little bit.
I'm sorry. Just, you know, you got that confidence in you.
Yeah, yeah, I know. You got that cavity, the no cavity swag. I get it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So who you guys got?
I'll throw one out. I had him in the five I named, so this is a repeat for those who read it, but William Nixon, to me, Will or William, however he chooses to go by as a Husker, to me is one of the most interesting curiosities on this team going forward. He can't fill out the whole pie that Wandale left behind, but maybe he can take up a few slices of that. He was such a versatile recruit. You don't want to put too much on him because he hasn't played one snap yet as a college guy. But I got the impression from Husker coaches when they talked about him that of all the newcomer wide receivers, like if they could pick one that they wish, you know, had been available to them, it would have been Will Nixon. Because I just think they thought he would have picked things up fast and he could have helped them. He wouldn't have solved all their issues, but he would have given them a boost. So I'm anxious to see what he can do.
I feel like I have a lot of different ways I could go with this one. But based off of how BC went, I'm going to go a similar path. I'll go with a guy we didn't get to see last year, and that's Sevion Morrison. I really kind of want to see – I know Marquis Stepp is the new exciting toy for the running back room, and the expectation is he's going to be the starter and all of those things, and that very well could be true. But with Morrison, I want to see or hear, I guess, because I don't know how much I'm going to see. And there's a lot to be discussed with the spring game and its schedule and when things are going to actually happen. And so that's a different conversation. But I want to see with Morrison, you know, how he kind of fits into that mold. And then I kind of want to hear from Ryan Held how they're sort of using him in some ways too, because I think he's a guy that can pick up some of the slack in terms of catches around the line of scrimmage. I think that Nebraska has to find another way to utilize its running backs beyond just, you know, plowing forward, and they don't even do a great job of utilizing that aspect of it. But I do think catches out of the backfield are going to be pretty big. I think Sevion Morrison has home run potential. I think his size and his speed could be interesting matchup wise with linebackers. I really do think that Nebraska has lost a lot in their offense when they lost Maurice Washington, and they haven't really replaced that. And so I'm not saying that Morrison is going to be Washington. They're not that similar of players, but I do think he has the ability to catch out of the backfield. And I do think that could be a really important thing for this offense to add to what I think should be a pretty good running game if they commit to it with Marquis Stepp.
I was leaning heavily towards Sevion Morrison, but I will move to the other side of the ball. And I think one, as much as Nebraska is getting back with the senior crew, can we call them the geriatric gang? Is that appropriate? No.
Fine.
Anyways, don't print the bumper stickers yet. We're still workshopping that one. So
on the Jell-O bunch.
One intriguing position battle that will happen in that defense this year in the spring is going to be at that cornerback spot. DiCaprio Boodle opted to move on. a couple guys that are going to be in the mix there, one being Quentin Newsom, who we saw at times last year, primarily on special teams. We saw him a little bit. But you've got Braxton Clark coming back off of a season-ending shoulder injury. And he's an intriguing guy. He's got the length that Nebraska covets in their defensive backs. I think last year he probably would have been a lot more in the mix than he ended up being, obviously because of the injury. But I think he was kind of the forgotten guy in some ways with the injury. So I'm eager to see where he's at in his recovery, if he can get back in that mix, and kind of, you know, what that potentially means for the defensive backfield, which seemed like it could be a huge question mark. And, you know, with some decisions, is all of a sudden a very veteran, solid group. So I'll be watching that battle in particular on defense, because there's really not going to be, I think, a ton of depth chart movement just based on a lot of those decisions and guys coming back.
I got a lot of Braxton Clark stock, very high on him. Was disappointed when he obviously couldn't go in 2020, but I expect that he'll be a large part of the defense. I sort of look for them to rotate both Newsom and Clark in that spot, for what it's worth. And I don't think that that'll be a bad thing. And sticking on the defensive side of the ball, another guy, and I'm pretty sure BC wrote about him, but Javen Wright. I mean, it's a big spring. He needs to stay healthy to kind of continue the ascension, and people are sort of hoping that he can play in that JoJo Doman role. So this is an opportunity for him to kind of earn some playing time in what is now a pretty populated outside linebacker room. You think about it. You have Doman return. You have Garrett Nelson. We don't know what they're going to do with Nick Henrich. You have Caleb Tanner, Feldarius Payne, Wright, Jamari Butler. So there's Nico Cooper. There's a fair amount of people in that outside linebacker room right now. And so, you know, Wright doesn't want to get lost. He's going to have to kind of show up in the spring as well. So there's a bonus one.
Go ahead, BC. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that's sort of, you've got the Doman storyline, and then you've got the separate one that is the life after Doman storyline. And that's what you're talking. I mean, that it's a good thing Nebraska's not taking on that challenge right now. That was why Doman coming back was so big, because I just don't think they had the answer yet. But they really need, and you named a couple of them besides Javen, they need like two or three guys, at least a couple guys they think like after this year they could be the next guy there, and they really feel confident about it, more so than I think they do now. Isaac Gifford's an interesting little chess piece too. I don't know if he can follow his brother's footstep and move down and at some point be an outside backer, if he'll have the exact same frame or not, but I know they like him. And if you were paying close attention, he was definitely a guy that he was getting some defensive snaps. Another guy I think is interesting, when you were talking about Braxton Clark and Quentin Newsom, I think Tamon Lynham is a guy they really like still. And, a big thing is going to be keeping those guys patient who might have to wait another year before they're a full-time guy. Will some of those seniors play? So they're going to have some good relationship building and work behind the scenes with some of those guys if it's not quite their turn yet.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's definitely good stuff.
The wheel, there's a wheel stat of the day too. Just if you guys want it, I'll throw
it's
it
on
out.
The wheel. It's yeah. Written on the wheel.
Yep. Former Nebraska basketball player Isaiah Roby. I'm not sure how much you guys pay attention to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm guessing quite a bit. But Isaiah Roby carving out a nice little niche for himself, averaging 8.9 points a game, 4.6 rebounds. He's shooting 40% from three-point range. And, you know, is kind of getting in the mix for some playing time there. So well done by him, but that's your Isaiah Roby update. Just, you know, quietly, you know, putting together a nice little season down there in Oklahoma City.
Are we going to add this segment to the show going forward, where we just pick a random Nebraska alum and discuss what they're doing?
We could.
I think it's a great way to flesh out the show or to finish it off. I like it.
Okay, we can do that.
It's that's good. We can assign it. Like, we can once a week, you know, we'll just have one of us come up with a person, and then we close out the show with that.
Sounds good. I like to get in the weeds a little bit, and there's some guys out there that would be, I think, pretty interesting.
Probably better than regular flossing updates as a segment. So that's a good call by you guys.
Agreed. Entirely agree. Any closing thoughts here?
That was it.
I got nothing. I used up everything.
We have used up everything, but we'll come back with more on Thursday, another podcast this week. Of course, we'll have plenty of stuff on the website as well at Husker 24/7. You can get the recruiting. You can get some volleyball. You can get football. The early enrollees are coming. They should be here this week. I'm sure we'll have some coverage on that as well. Check all of that out at Husker 24/7. We'll catch you on Thursday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.